Hello, and thanks for joining Wicker Park Lutheran Church Sermons. Wicker Park Lutheran Church is a diverse ELCA Lutheran congregation in the Wicker Park neighborhood of Chicago. We gather at 10 a.m. to fully live into our incarnational faith as we experience God's presence in the gathered assembly, and we welcome you to join us. In just a moment, you'll first hear with a gospel reading from the associated sermon for the service that you're about to listen to. We hope that that gospel gives you some context before you jump right into the sermon. Thanks for checking us out, and we hope to see you soon.
The Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said, "Friend, who sent me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for this one's life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." Then Jesus told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "What should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grains and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool. This very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
One of my seminary professors always said that when we are trying to understand a particular Bible passage, one of the most important things to consider is what is missing. One of the most important questions to ask is, who is missing from the story? Or what in the story do we hear nothing about, even though we probably should? Learning how to ask these questions, to focus on who or what is missing, completely reshaped how I read the Bible. And as I look at our gospel lesson today, I think about her words because there is a whole lot missing from the parable that Jesus tells us. Let's start with what we do know. We know that the rich man in the parable has an abundance of crops. We know that he isn't sure where to put all of them, so he asks himself and decides that he should destroy his new barns and build larger ones to store his grain. We know that the man plans to store enough grain for years to come so that he can live out his life in luxury, eating and drinking and being merry. But what's missing? As I look at the story, there are a number of things I notice that we don't hear about. Some that are truly missing and some that we modern day readers miss because we're not reading in the original Greek. I promise I won't go too far into the Greek, those of you, but. To start, we don't hear anything about the rich man's labor. Jesus specifically says the land of the rich man produced abundantly. In saying this, Jesus gives complete credit to the land, making it clear that this rich man's bounty isn't something that the rich man necessarily earned or deserved. We also don't hear anything about the people whose labor actually worked that land. The grain couldn't have harvested itself. In the first century Roman Empire, wealthy landowners often depended on tenant farmers and day laborers and even slaves to tend to their crops. We can imagine that the rich man in this parable likely would have relied on a large number of oppressed people who worked day in and day out, year after year, being forced by their societal system to sacrifice their bodies for wealth that they would never see. Without exploiting their labor, the rich man's abundant bounty would never have been possible, and yet they are missing from this parable. The rich man doesn't even consider them, as he claims the wealth that the land produced and they harvested as wholly his own. And as the rich man considers what he should do with this newfound abundance, we see what else is missing from the story. The rich man shows no gratitude, no sense of responsibility toward God or toward other people. Throughout the Hebrew scriptures, land was a central sign of God's covenant. And so the rich man would have been raised to believe that his land overproducing was a sign of God's blessing. But we don't hear him thank God for this blessing. We don't hear him ask God how he should share this blessing responsibly with other people. What's missing is the we from this story. Only I is what we hear. As the rich man says, I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. I will store all my grains and my goods. Instead of using his blessing to bless others, instead of asking God or the workers or the wider community what they need, he consults only with himself and finds a solution that serves himself alone. He finds a solution that leaves him with far more than he could ever use or need. He finds a solution that allows him to relax and eat and drink and be merry at the expense of his neighbors who are stuck toiling around him. And you'll notice that even though this solution is for himself alone, it still likely required the labor of all those around him. I mean, do we really think the rich man is tearing down that barn and building a new one all by himself? There is one other piece that I think we modern day readers of the Bible miss when we don't read in the original Greek. Again, I promise this will be short, but I think it's important because it emphasizes just how unjustly the rich man was acting. Now, the word for land used in this parable is the Greek word hora. The word land alone, when I read it in this English context, brings to mind maybe a specific farm or a few fields. But the word hora is more often translated throughout the New Testament as an entire region or territory. The rich man doesn't simply own a nice farm or a few acres, and his decision doesn't just impact a small handful of people. He likely owned a vast amount of property. If we think about this economically, that means his decision to hoard his harvest would have impacted the food supply of an entire population of people, allowing him to control and manipulate the market, allowing him to gain economic power at the expense of his neighbors, who would be forced to depend on him. So, now that we've considered all of the things missing from this parable, let's review what we know. A rich man owns a lot of property. He has an abundant harvest, not because of his own actions or genius, but because of the land and the labor of those who work for him, many of whom likely have little or no freedom. He doesn't thank God or thank all those whose work made his wealth possible, and he doesn't share the wealth back with them. Instead, he hoards more than he could ever possibly use, and the divide between rich and poor grows further and further. Is this story starting to sound familiar to you? We live in a time where we're seeing this exact story play out over and over and over again. The richest 1% of people have more wealth than the bottom 95% of the world's population. Trillion-dollar corporations give their executives millions a year, while the lowest-paid workers are stuck working multiple jobs to afford rent to put food on their family's table. Our country still hasn't reckoned with the reality that its wealth was built on the back of slave labor. And recently, our government just passed a bill to gut the federal social safety net that millions rely on, all to cut taxes so the rich get richer while the poor struggle to find health care for their families and food for their tables. The reality of this world sends us the message that unless we are at the top of the economic food chain, we have no value. The world sends us these messages and leaves us feeling so much deep and understandable anxiety about our future and our security. The reality of our world pushes us to believe that the only way to survive, the only way to respond, is to act like the rich man, to similarly hoard our wealth, to worry only about ourselves. Well, the good news, church, is that God sent Jesus to earth to completely overturn the values of this world. God sent Jesus to make the creation of a new reality possible. At the very beginning of Jesus's parable, the very first thing we hear is that there is more than enough for all. We hear that the land produces abundantly. And we are reminded that just as the land provides abundance, even though the rich man did nothing to earn it, God gives us abundant grace and love, even though we do nothing to earn it. In our psalm today, we sang, "The ransom of life is so great, there would never be enough to pay it." And in this world, we are reminded that all the wealth in the world could not possibly earn God's grace, and yet God gives this grace and love and welcome to each and every one of us freely and abundantly. And when the rich man in this parable responds to God's abundance by reproducing the values of our world, by furthering economic inequality, creating scarcity, and buying into the idea that possessions are what saves you and determines your value, God calls him a fool. Now, out of the more than 30 parables Jesus tells us in the New Testament, this is the only one we hear God explicitly enter into and speak out. That clues us into just how central this message is to the realization of God's kingdom on earth. God's message in this parable is clear. We do not have to play by the rules of a world that says that our worth comes from our wealth and our security comes from what we can store up for ourselves. Because in his death and resurrection, Jesus invites us to embrace God's value. To accept that our values and our security comes from God alone, to believe that there is enough grace and love and liberation for all, to work toward creating a world where the hungry are fed and every person has a place at the table. In his death and resurrection, Jesus frees us to advocate for and create and demand a world where all of God's people truly belong to one another. Now, in a few minutes, we will joyfully welcome new members into our church community. And in this invitation, we will all have the opportunity to reflect on what it really means to be in community with one another, to love and serve each other and God together. And just as in our second reading, the Colossians were invited to radically reorient their values, to let go of their old ways and become one in Christ, Jesus reminds us in our gospel today that we are called to do the same. In the face of a world that celebrates the rich man, we are called to follow Jesus, who rejected greed and lifted up the oppressed. We are called to pray God's kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven by taking care of one another, not just spiritually, but materially, by feeding and clothing and welcoming and loving one another. And most of all, we are called to come to God's table, to share in this meal and to trust that even in a world that tries to tell us otherwise, God's abundance truly belongs to each and every one of us. Amen.